All right, good morning, everyone. So let's begin. So, again, I know we were supposed to get back to Tehillim in Meretz Hashem this week, but there are so many exciting upcoming events. So the truth is, had I thought about this a little bit more, today is Pesach Sheni, and although Pesach Sheni often gets overlooked, it happens to be, it's a magnificent and overwhelming Yom Tov in and of itself, but okay, instead what I'd like to focus on this morning a little bit is Lag BaOmer, and to try to help cultivate a deeper appreciation, a deeper understanding for what this day means, for what it represents, and ultimately, again, how it impacts. You know, the beauty of our Yamim Tovim in general is that their impact is felt way beyond just the simple calendrical date. Their impact is often felt, again, meaning if you understand Lag BaOmer, that informs and it shapes the way you live throughout the year. It's the same if you understand Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is not just significant on the 10th of Tishrei. Yom Kippur is significant throughout the year. Every Yom Tov has a message that is not only relevant within its calendrical framework, but is relevant throughout the year. And Lag BaOmer is no exception. Let's take a look at number one. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Nogin Sholei Staper Lag BaOmer. We have the custom not to take a haircut up until Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer. Sha'omrim, Sha'az Paschum Milamos, because they say that's when the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. Vein L'Stapra Yom Lag BaOmer. So again, the Shulchan Aruch gets into some of the interesting details over here. We know that this year, again, there's, interestingly enough, because Lag BaOmer falls on a Sunday, so these restrictions are already relaxed as of Erev Shabbos, already Erev Shabbos, one is permitted to go ahead, take haircut, shave, whatever restrictions one observes. So the Rama writes, if you take a look in the middle of the first line, Haga, Obevendinos Elu, Noagin Kidvarov, Elamistarprim Yom Lamed Gimel. Fine, so the Shulchan Aruch says, the way we conduct ourselves, we being Ashkenazic Jews, is that we go ahead and we lift the restrictions, meaning the Mechab Rav Yosef Karo says that you really should wait until the 34th day of the Omer in order to go ahead and take haircuts. The Rama says, our custom, Ashkenazic Jews, is that already on the 33rd day we lift all of the restrictions, but I don't want to focus on restrictions today. Instead, what I want to focus on is the underlined line number one. Umar bimbo kitzas simcha. We go ahead and we celebrate, literally, how would you say, Umar bimbo kitzas simcha. We increase with what? A little bit of simcha. A little bit of simcha. Ve'ein omrim bo tachnun. And we do not recite tachnun. So just again, a word on tachnun. Tachnun, we know, is a supplicatory prayer. So tachnun, again, throughout the course of davening, we essentially assume all positions over the course of davening. We daven standing up, we daven sitting down, and we daven prostrating. Now, we don't actually prostrate ourselves outside of the Beis HaMikdash. It's one of the things that one is not permitted to do, bless you, outside of the Beis HaMikdash. But we do what's called the tefillah sefayim. We fall on our arm, and that's as close to prostration as we come. The tefillah of tachnun in and of itself is a supplicatory prayer that discusses reaching out to God in times of distress. Therefore, any day which has a certain element of excessive joy or Yom Tov associated with it, we do not recite Tachanun. So the Rama therefore says, I'm sorry?
Like
Yom that's. I wanted to give that shir last week, but I good. Good. So Umar bin Boktas Simcha. Boktas Simcha. Good. You could see me after this year. We could talk about that as well. So again, the Shulchan Aruch writes, and again, I want to focus on this interesting phraseology. We increase with a little bit of simcha. Now again, that phraseology, that lashon, is a little bit strange. Why? So what does it mean, kitzas? Meaning, again, we know this rabbinic formulation. For example, what does this remind you of? Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. Right? So in the month of Adar comes, we increase our simcha. Or the converse, Mishenichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha. But here, the Shulchan Aruch uses such an interesting phrase. Umar bin bo kitzas simcha. We increase our happiness, but don't get too carried away, right? Don't get too happy, right? Just a little bit of happiness. The question obviously is, what does that mean? So clearly what the Shulchan Aruch is trying to convey to us is, there is an element of additional happiness on this day, but it's not complete. Meaning, so you should increase your happiness a little bit. Yes, I'm only 5 minutes in. Good. I'm so happy I came. Exactly. And again, there is an inherent textual contradiction. Good. Correct. Marbin means a lot. Kitsas means a little. There's an inherent, excellent. There's an inherent contradiction in terms. So meaning, another question. Okay. This is it for the semester. Yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, so good. So what you're asking is, what does this phrase mean? Which is exactly what our share is going to be about. So grab meaning. So how are we to understand this idea of the Mechaber? What the first of all, there's a number of questions. Number one, what exactly is the joyous nature of this day? Wherein lies the simcha of Lag BaOmer? And again, if there is a reason to be misameach, if there is a reason to actually celebrate on Lag BaOmer, then why place the cap of kitsas? Meaning, either tell me that it's a joyous day in which one should celebrate, or it's not such a joyous day, or it's just a regular day. But you seem to almost have this type of formulation which keeps it in the middle. On one hand, I'm not going to give you an adar-like formulation. It's not going to be mishenichnas lag ba'omer mar b'misimcha. On the other hand, again, it's clearly more than just a regular day. You understand, meaning it's important to understand that every day there's an obligation to be b'simcha. You know, when Rabbi Nachman wrote, mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha tamid, that there's a mitzvah, Rabbi Nachman said, whatever that mitzvah is, there's a mitzvah to be b'simcha every single day. A Jew should always be b'simcha. But after Shulchan Aruch is telling me this, then obviously Lag BaOmer is unique in some way. So how do we understand what appears to be the inherently contradictory and complex nature of this day? But to kind of distill this down to a simpler question is, what is the nature of the simcha of Lag BaOmer? So we're going to go through two different approaches today. The first approach is really what the one the Shulchan Aruch mentioned. If you look at number two, so the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara Maseches Yevamah says, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Lamud Torah b'yalduso, yomad Torah b'ziknuso. If a person learned Torah in his youth, he should still continue to learn Torah in his old age. Similarly, Hayulo tamidim b'yalduso, yihiulo tamidim b'ziknuso. If a person establishes students in his youth, he should make sure to continue to establish students in his old age. Now, why? Why does Rabbi Akiva say that? Shene'emar, because the pasuk says, Baboker zara azaracha. Now, Rabbi Akiva is quoting the pasuk in Koheles, which you have on number three in your sheet, where Shlomo Melech writes, Baboker zara azaracha, in the morning, literally again, plant your seeds, vela erev al tanach yadecha, in the evening, do not withdraw your hand. What does that mean, do not withdraw your hand? It means, even if you plant it in the morning, continue to plant even in the evening. Why? And Shlomo Melech says something amazing. Ki eincha yodea eze yichshar. Because at the end of the day, you never know in life which of your efforts bear fruit. So if you only plant in your youth, right? You only plant in the morning. You only plant in the morning, and you don't plant in the evening. You're putting all of your stock in the morning plants. If they don't yield any fruit, then you're stuck. But if you go ahead and you plant in the morning and in the evening, not knowing which one is going to bear fruit, the good news is, hazeh ozeh. One of them will bear fruit. And what's the best case scenario? Vim shneihem ke'echad. If all of your actions bear fruit, then tovim. Then how incredible is that? Now, you know, sometimes people dispense advice. It's always easy to dispense advice, you know, kind of from the armchair. It's different when you see advice coming from someone who came to this reality because of his own life experiences. So what Rabbi Akiva seems to be telling us is, essentially, never stop growing, never stop doing, never stop planting. Why? Because the way life works is sometimes the things that you plant in one era of your life do not endure. And so if you're relying on the plantings, the saplings of one period of time, if those don't endure, you're stuck with nothing. But if you're always continuously planting, then at the end of the day, recognizing that there will always be some amount of your efforts that will not bear fruit. You know, this is an important episode. I was sharing this with my Ma'alot class. We were talking about an interesting machlokis, Rabbi Shabbat Yochai, who we'll discuss, and Rabbi Shmuel, about the nature of work and learning in this world. So, right, Rabbi Shmuel has the opinion that a person should work and learn. Rabbi Shabbat Yochai has the opinion that a person should only learn. A person should only devote themselves to ruchnius. So, one of the girls asked, it was an excellent question, said, it's clear that Rashbi is right. It's clear that Rashbi is right, that you should only go ahead and learn. I said, first of all, you just got back from seminary, right? So yeah, it's clear that you should only learn. But she had a very good raya. What was her proof? Her proof was Adam Arishon. It's clear, remember again, Adam Arishon is tasked with working only after the sin of the Eitz Das Tov Hara. So that is a widely held misconception. When you look at when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam Arishon, he says HaKadosh Baruch Hu put Adam in Gan Eden, why? La'avda o lishamra, to work it and to guard it. So what do you think? That Adam Arishon was sitting by the trees with his Sefer Tehillim, davening for the trees to grow? No, he worked the land. His obligation was to work the soil. He was in charge. He was the Ribono Shel Olam's landscaper. That was his job. So what was the curse of Adam Arishon? The curse of Adam Arishon is that in the Gan Eden world, here was the beautiful bracha. You literally reaped what you sowed. In other words, whatever effort you put in, you are guaranteed to see the results of that effort. In the aftermath of the sin of Adam and Chava, the curse of Adam Arishon is that you'll plant vikotz v'dardar titzmach. You'll plant, but very often in life you won't get back what you plant. Meaning, that's our greatest frustration in this world. I'm sure none of us mind working hard. The difficulty in life is that sometimes you can work very hard, and what happens? You don't get anything out of it. And it's not because you didn't try hard enough. And it's not because you didn't do all the right things. Just sometimes, for whatever the reason, the earth, life, reality doesn't cooperate. There's not always reciprocity between effort put in and results that are gleaned. That's the curse of Adam Arishon. So Rabbi Akiva says over here, Rabbi Akiva says something amazing. So Rabbi Akiva comes back and Rabbi Akiva says that I could speak to this reality of Shlomo HaMelech. Because I worked hard. I worked hard in my youth. But yet, again, I have nothing to show for all of the labors of my youth. Why not? What happens? So the Gemara says, Amru, 12,000 zugim tamidim hayu le Rabbi Akiva, migvas adan tipras. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students, 24,000 students, from one end of Israel to the other. The kulan meisu parak echa. They all died at the same time of the year. Mipnei shlo nagu kavod zel hazeh, because they did not respect one another. So we're not going to get into what that means and how to understand that. V'haya ha'olam shamim. The world was destined. You have to understand that Rabbi Akiva's students died. So that was the future Torah leadership. Rabbi Akiva's students were not just students. These were the elite. These were the mitsuyonim. These were the greatest of Klal Yisrael. These were the greatest Talmidei Chachamim. They are all wiped out. 24,000 Talmidim gone. There's an existential threat to the future and continuity of Torah. So what does Rabbi Akiva, would you understand, what does that mean? Everything that Rabbi Akiva planted evaporated. Everything that Rabbi Akiva planted was gone, decimated, nothing. And by the way, you know, we're all familiar with this story, but you understand that catastrophe and tragedy like this doesn't end with the death of 24,000 Talmidim. That's also Kai Pasa, that there are 24,000 mishpachos, that there are 24,000 widows, that there are more than 24,000 orphans, meaning this was a tragedy of epic proportions that happened to the Torah community of Klal Yisrael. And Rabbi Akiva is left there holding. As such, he has to bury his talmidim. He has to take care of their widows. He has to take care of their children. All of this falls on his shoulders. All of his life's work is gone. What does Rabbi Akiva do? Rabbi Akiva went to the south. He found 5 new Talmidim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, Vehem Heim Ha'emidu Torah Osa Shah. And ultimately, again, they went ahead, and these new rabbis went ahead and rebuilt the Torah community. I'll just point out, we'll get into it later. Interestingly enough, a number of these Rabbanim were already Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Another interesting idea, which is what? Which is, we often think that all of Rabbi Akiva's students died. It's not true. All of the ones who were learning under him at that time. For example, we will see Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was one of the major Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, yet he's one of the new 5. That's Rabbi Shimon. He's one of the new 5. So not all of Rabbi Akiva's students were wiped out, the ones who were in the yeshiva at that time. Rabbi Akiva goes ahead and... No, not all 5 were students of Rabbi Akiva. 2 of them were students of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva teaches them, and what happens? And again, the Gemara ends off. When did this happen? Kula Mesu me Pesach va'adat Tzeres. All of this happened from between Pesach to Shavuos. So, of course, this ultimately is one of the primary reasons for why we observe certain mourning practices over the course of Sfira. Over the course of Sfira, of course, historically, we know that also, again, other terrible events happened during this period of time. The Tefillah of Avarachamim, right? The Tefillah of Avarachamim that we say Shabbos Musaf was composed ultimately, again, for the terrible atrocities that were perpetrated during the Crusades to the communities of Spires, Worms, and Mains, which also happened during these days of Sfira. So again, but this is the first major tragedy that happened during this period of time. Therefore, says the Meiri in number 4, Kabbalah biyad geonim shebiyom lag ba'omer paska hamisa. So again, the Meiri writes that our Kabbalah, our tradition is that the students began dying either on Pesach or right after Pesach, but they stopped dying on lag ba'omer. They stopped dying on Lag BaOmer, and therefore again we begin to see why the Shulchan Aruch says. Therefore again we marbim kitzas simcha. We have a little bit of joy. The students stop dying. The avelos practices are lifted. Asks the Pri Chadasha number 5. Yesh ledaktek besimcha zu lama. So the Pri Chadasha is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So I'm going a little bit out of. So he asks over here. Says, okay, so I got it. Now you're telling me the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying on Lag BaOmer on the 33rd day of the Omer, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch says in response to that, Marbim Kitzah Simcha, we celebrate. Says the Pri Chadasha, I don't understand that for the life of me. V'im yishum shepasku milamos mabikach. So you're telling me because they stopped dying on the 33rd day of the Omer, that's why we celebrate? That's why we celebrate? Harilo nishar echad mehem, v'kula mesu. There are no students left of the original 24,000. They all died. Uma siba shel simcha zu. So the Pri Chadasha is bothered by a fundamental idea, which is, in Judaism, whenever we have a simcha, so simcha is never the result of the cessation of suffering. Simcha usually is the result of the introduction of some new positive dynamic. So asks the Pri Chadasha, I don't understand. Shulchan Aruch, when I read your words, and again, if you go back to number 1, the Shulchan Aruch says this explicitly. No, he says, Noagim Shul V'Stap, when talking about the mourning practices, he ultimately goes in and says, we observe until Lag BaOmer, why? Shem Shas Paskulamos. So again, the fact that the mourning practices end on the 33rd day of the Omer, I understand that. I understand if the mourning stops when the students stopped dying. But that's not all the Shulchan Aruch is saying. What the Pri Chadasha is asking is, but Shulchan Aruch, you go further. And you say, Umar bin Bo Kitzah Simcha. Not only do we stop mourning, but we celebrate. So how are we to understand increased, enhanced, amplified Simcha just because they stopped dying? That doesn't seem to make sense. It would appear to me ultimately, again, that even though they stopped dying, I understand if you stop mourning as a result of that. But that shouldn't be a reason for enhanced simcha. So the Pri Chadasha gives his own answer. He says, V'lachein, efshar shasimcha hi al ha-talmidim shehosef Rabbi Akiva achakach shalomesu. It could be, says the Pri Chadasha, that the simcha is not for the cessation of the 24,000 who died, but rather, again, a simcha for the new 5 who have been inaugurated. Okay, but leaving aside that last answer of the Pri Chadasha, approach number 1 in understanding the simcha of Lag BaOmer is that it is the day in which the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. It was the day that the plague that claimed 24,000 came to an end. Now, by the way, you understand meaning, why did it end? Because they all died. Meaning, it's not that it ended because, you know, there was some type of turnaround. It ended because there was no one left to die. Meaning, oh, wow. They all were killed out during this period of time. So again, first approach is, we nevertheless, marbim kitzah simcha, because the plague stopped, or because there were new talmidim, fine. Look at approach number 2. Approach, so again, in approach number 1, the focus of the simcha of Lag BaOmer is what we'll call Rabbi Akiva centric. It's all about Rabbi Akiva, all about his talmidim. Take a look at number 6, second approach. So this is quite another amazing Gemara. I don't really have time to do justice to the whole Gemara, but suffice it to say the following. The Gemara discusses a conversation that is occurring between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, and a man by the name of Yehuda ben Gerim. And they are all discussing the Romans. So if you take a look, 6 Aleph. Pasach Rabbi Yehuda va'amar, kama no'im, second line, ma'aseim shal umazu. Rabbi Yehuda says, look how wonderful the Romans are. Tiknu shukim, tiknu gisharim, tiknu merchatzos. They went ahead and they established marketplaces, bridges, bathhouses. So again, Rabbi Yehuda is literally extolling the Romans for all of the beautiful infrastructure they have contributed to Klal Yisrael. Great. Na'ana Rabbi, excuse me, what happens? Rabbi Yossi shasak. Rabbi Yossi said nothing. Na'ana Rabbi Shema Yochai ba'amar. So Rabbi Shema Yochai says, what are you talking about? Koma shetiknu, lo tiknu elotzorech atzman. Everything the Romans do, they didn't do for us. Yeah. They do to benefit themselves. Tiknu shukin lahoshibah and zonos. They went and they established marketplaces so that the harlots could have a place to congregate. Merchatzos, bathhouses, because the Romans placed an undue importance on physicality. Gisharim, bridges, litol mehen mechas, to go ahead and collect taxes. So what happens? Halach Yehuda. So what Rabbi Shema Yochai is saying essentially is, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. Which is anything, and this, by the way, it's an incredible, you know, in life in general, it's never good to be cynical. Cynicism is one of the worst midos a person could ever have. Because when you're cynical, you know, you don't believe anyone, you don't believe anything. That being said, it is important to approach life with some little bit of cynicism and recognize that there are some people who, or some entities that when they do things for you, are never doing it for you. They're doing it for them. Now again, it doesn't mean you shouldn't be thankful. It shouldn't mean you shouldn't have gratitude, but just know what the motivations are. So Shema Yochai is saying, my fellow rabbinic colleagues, you know, let's not get too carried away with ourselves over here. It's true that we're benefiting ultimately again from the infrastructure, but at the end of the day, none of this is being done for us. Whatever the Romans do for one purpose, which is for the Romans. If it benefits Rome, they do it. If it doesn't benefit Rome, if we happen to benefit, that is a side distinction. But nothing is ever done for us. By the way, what Rashbi is pointing out over here is a very, very important mindset of the Jew in Galus. The Jew in Galus should always understand that as wonderful and as beautiful and as welcoming as a host nation is, that hospitality is never for Klal Yisrael. That hospitality is for the benefit of the host nation. So again, if there could be a mutually beneficial relationship, matovu manoim, that's fantastic. But just understand, the only altruistic chesed you will ever find in this world really is the chesed we perpetrate between ourselves. That we do if we could do, but again, when it comes from the outside, just important to understand, it could be mutually beneficial, but there always has to be some benefit to the other party. So what happens? Word gets back to Rome. Yes? So that's the whole machlokis as to how to understand his particular reaction to this. Yeah. So what happens? Number five, so letter base, six base. So remember again, word gets out, which by the way, you know, the reason you understand, people often have the question, why in the yeshivos? Why is it that boys only focus on Gemara, right? Sometimes again, you wonder, why isn't my son learning any Navi or any Chumash or anything else? So you have to understand something. Everything is in Gemara. Everything is there. The Tanakh is in Gemara. Musar is in Gemara. Hashkafa is in Gemara. There's an amazing lesson. What's the amazing lesson here to be learned? There is no such thing as true confidentiality in life. Meaning, again, if you don't want people to know about something, there's only one way to guarantee that, and that is, don't say it. Don't say it. Because if you say it, some way, somehow, things have... Or see, here again, you have a conversation that's happening between great people. And there was no malicious intent over here. Yehuda ben Gerim went and conveyed this conversation to us. There was no malicious intent here. But what happens? Word gets out. Did you hear what Rashbi or Shema Yochai said about the Romans? And word gets out. And as word gets out, ultimately, again, it comes back to the Romans. As a result, there is a death sentence put out against Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And again, the Romans say, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai disparaged the Romans, we're going to kill him. Fine. So what happens? They go into hiding. So you know, again, paragraph base, Azuhu brei toshu bei midrasha. So first they try to hide out in the base medrash. So ultimately, again, remember, it's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his son, Rabbi Lazar, who both go into hiding. At some point, Rabbi Shimon says to his son, we have to get out of here. And it's interesting, he says, because it's not fair to your mother. He says, your mother is putting herself in mortal danger every single day to bring us food and drink. And it's only a matter of time until the Romans pressure, the Romans chas v'shalom do, you know, whatever they're going to do, we can't put her in mortal danger. We have to hide in a way that even she doesn't know where we are, as painful as that is. So the Gemara goes on, the famous story, the Gemara goes on, Azul Tashub Ma'arta, 6 base, second line, they go in, they hide in the cave. Israchish Nisa, Ivrilu Charuva Ve'ina Demaya. So a miracle occurred. A miracle occurred, and the Ribono Shel Olam created for them a spring, a spring of water, and a buxer, a carob tree. And this, the Gemara says, is ultimately again what they used to subsist on for 12 years. 12 years, Tresar Shasi, Rabbi Shomai Achai, and Rabbi Lazar go ahead and live in the cave. Just as an aside, by the way, it's important to know. You know, when Rabbi Shomai Achai says, I think I mentioned this maybe last week or a few weeks ago, Rabbi Shomai Achai says that if you put your trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't have to work because God will take care of all of your needs. Right? All of your needs is a relative term. All of your needs means if you are okay with water and boxer, absolutely, the Ribono Shel Olam will absolutely take care of you. If you're a bit more high maintenance than water and boxer, you probably should get a job. Meaning, again, this is a very, very important yisod. What Rosh Hashanah Chai is saying is, essentially, if you are totally removed from the world of Gashmius, if you're just not a Gashmi being, if physicality does not matter to you, if it's unimportant to you, and all you need to do is just simply fuel your goof so that your body could do avodas Hashem. If that's all you need, then yes. If that is the level you are on, then you could absolutely put your absolute faith in Kadosh Baruch Hu. And again, I don't know that boxer is going to spring up in your backyard, but the Baruch Hashem will take care of you if that's all you need. Yeah. But again, this is the important idea. But the thought that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me bekushta, you know, in comfort, if I just put. Rashbi does not give that guarantee. And that is not what Rashbi is saying. Rashbi would say, I believe Rashbi would say, that if you need the creature comforts of life, if you need to be a bit more pampered, then again, what I am describing as a lifestyle is not for you. See, goes on. Absolutely not. Not on this. Right? No, God, I'm kidding. God.
I want to ask you a big favor. Could you give this part of your drasha to my 27 grandchildren?
I have a better idea. I will send you the link to the shir, and at the next family gathering, you could go ahead and play it. What's that? All right. Good. With that. So let's go on a little bit. So remember. So what do we have over here? So let's go on. So again, the Gemara says at some point in time, paragraph Bays. 4 lines in. So what happens? Eliyahu Navi comes, he stands at the entranceway of the cave. And again, and Eliyahu Navi essentially says to them, you could come out. You could come out of the cave. So the rest of the story is a bit more complicated. It's not our topic for today. They come out of the cave, and again, essentially, after spending 12 years in such a heightened spiritual state, they can't reintegrate. So they see people working their fields, and they don't understand how people waste their time working the fields when you should be learning Torah. Meaning they lived... They essentially lived an existence of Olam Haba. I mean, they were totally removed from anything that was normative or physical. So they couldn't land. You know, sometimes this happens to people where they have, an enlightening or elated spiritual experience, and it's difficult to land. You know, reintegration is exceptionally difficult. So what happens? So the Gemara literally says, everywhere they looked, they destroyed. So Rav Kadosh Baruch Hu says, go back into the cave. They spend another year in the cave, and then ultimately they come out. Fine. Why is this story important? So if you look at number 7, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, Yotzu mehama'ara biyomazeh. What day did they leave the cave? Now it seems to be it was the same day both times. Take 1 and take 2. What day did they leave the cave? Lag Ba'omer. Lag Ba'omer. So again, according to this approach, really the simcha of Lag Ba'omer is the re-entry of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai into the world. Now, why was the re-entry of Shimon Bar Yochai an important? Why does that make it a yomtiv? Because understand, by the time Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai comes back out of the cave, what has already happened? Rabbi Akiva, his Rebbe, has already been executed by the Romans. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai becomes the Talmud Mufak, the primary disciple of Rabbi Akiva. We know that because Rabbi Akiva is incarcerated because he taught Torah in public, and therefore, again, it was prohibited for him to have students with him in jail. There was one student, he was permitted entry for one student. Who does he choose? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is by the side of his Rebbe the entire time. Rabbi Akiva is killed by the Romans. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai goes into hiding, which means that when Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is not there, there is not this head of Klal Yisrael. There is not this ranking Gadol Hador. When Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai comes back into the world, Klal Yisrael has the Memale Makam for Rabbi Akiva. Klal Yisrael has the new person who is going to lead them and to shepherd them through still some of the darkest times in Jewish history. Because understand what's happening over here. This is the period of Hadrianic persecution. This is the period of Asar Harugim Malchus. This is a time of terrible and intense persecution. And when Rabbi Akiva was gone, of course there were other great Rabbanim. But you know, to be a Mamale Makum, to fill the shoes of Rabbi Akiva, requires a different kind of personality. And Rashbi was that person. And therefore, again, says Yarach HaShulchan and others, the day that Rashbi rejoins society, the day that Rashbi ultimately, again, rejoins the community of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, this was a great yontiv. Mar bin bo kitzas simcha. But then Aruch HaShulchan quotes another opinion who says, Omrim shenestalik biyomze. Others say, no. The greatness of Lag BaOmer is not the day when Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai came out of the cave, but rather again, it's his yahrzeit. Rashbi died on Lag BaOmer. Which again now begs another question, which is, if it's his yahrzeit, why Marben Bo Kitzas Simcha? So, you know, again, certainly, and this is much more popularized by the Hasidim, that there's the concept of a tikkun and there's the concept of being somewhat festive. You know, this is an interesting distinction between way yahrzeits are marked often within Hasidic circles and outside of Hasidic circles. So outside of Hasidic circles, it's much more of a morose day. Shulchan Aruch brings down the idea of fasting on the yahrzeit. In Hasidic circles, there is a Yom Tov component to it. Where does the Yom Tov component come from? Because there's a belief that on the yahrzeit, the neshama is moved up a level in Gan Eden. Every yahrzeit, the neshama moves up. The neshama, of course, only moves up if there are people here on this earth who are actively working on behalf of the neshama. So if a person left behind children, loved ones, friends, a community, who are actively working on behalf of the neshama, then every year the neshama moves up, and that is cause for simcha. But again, the notion that we'd be marbim kitzah simcha, that we'd celebrate on a day that is Rashbi's yahrzeit, seems a bit strange. So, but now to understand where that simcha comes from, take a look at number 9. So this is from a beautiful sefer called Bein Pesach L'Shavuos. It's not a very imaginative title, but quite descriptive. It goes through the significance of the days between Pesach and Shavuos, and he has a whole section over here about Lag BaOmer. And listen to this. Kach ne'emar b'zar. So remember again, the Zohar here describes Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's last day on this earth. Lamadnu ba'osiyum shem Shimon ratza li'istalek min ha'olam. On that day that Rabbi Shimon wanted to leave this world, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, v'hayim esadet dvarav. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was organizing. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai knew that this was his last day. He knew it was his last day on this earth. And even if you look at the Lashon of the Zohar, ratza li'istalek, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was ready to leave. He wanted to leave this world. He wanted to go on to the next dimension of existence. He was getting his affairs in order. So there was a whole group of Talmidim, including his own son Rabbi Lazar, who were assembled in front of him. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Hine ata shas ratzonu. He, so Rabbi Shimon Achai says, this is now a very auspicious time. Rabbi Shimon Achai says, I want to be able to come into the world to come without any embarrassment. Can you imagine that? Rabbi Shimon Achai. Great time. He's worried about coming. He's worried about being embarrassed about the life that he led when he comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. See, here's what I want to do, says Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Paragraph base. V'hine, dvarim kidoshim shelo gilisi ad ata, ani rotze legalos lifnei ashchina. There are things, says Rav Shimon bar Yochai, parts of Torah, that I have not revealed until this point in time, that I want to reveal now. Shelo yomru shebichisar nistalakti min ha'olam, va'ad ata hayu nistarim belibi, kedei likanis b'ma olam haba. Rav Shimon bar Yochai says, I have to be honest with you. He says to his Talmidim, to his own son, I've held out on you. There are parts of Torah that I have, that I know, not parts of knowledge that I know, that I have never shared with anyone. And now I want to share them before I leave this world. The kachani misader eschem, oschem. See, here's how I'm going to arrange all of you. Rabbi Abba Yichtov. Rabbi Abba, you are to take copious notes on every single thing that I say. Rabbi Lazar, Yilmod Bepeh. Rabbi Lazar, my son, I want you to review everything that I'm saying. After I say it, you repeat it. And the rest of you, all of the rest of you, I want you to review everything I'm saying in your heart. So what does Rav Shlomo Bar Yochai, what does he teach them? He teaches them esoteric Torah. He teaches them again what we call Torah's Hanistar. Torah has two parts to it. What we call Torah's Hanigla, revealed Torah, which ultimately again is Tanakh, is Chumash obviously, is Gemara, is Mishnah. That Torah's Hanigla. There's also called something called Torah's Hanistar. Torah's Hanistar means the hidden dimensions of Torah. Now we have come to call this Torah's Hanistar the Zohar, Kabbalah, Achash. So what happens on the day of his death? On the day of his death, what Rabbi Shlomo Bar Yochai says to his son, says to his Talmidim, is, I've had this Torah's Hanistar, this hidden dimension of Torah in my heart all of these years, and I've never shared it for whatever the reason. I must share it with you before I leave this world. I must share it with you now. So after he revealed to them what's called the Idra Zuta. Idra Zuta is one part of the Zohar, what we come to know as the Zohar. He revealed this part. Listen to this paragraph, Gimel. Om Rabbi Abba, Lo Gamar Hamar HaKodesh Lomar Chayim, Ash Nishtachachu Devarav. So amazing enough, says Rabbi Abba, I can't explain it to you, but although we were crystal clear on what Rashbi said when he was saying it, when he finished talking, we couldn't remember. And by the way, that's why Rabbi Shlomo Bar Yochai instructed one of the Rabbanim to what?
To write
down everything. Meaning there was something so overwhelming about this experience that as soon as it was finished, it was over. So I kept writing, and I wanted to write more. V'lo shamati. He describes, I was writing, but yet I couldn't hear. V'lo hari mosi roshi, I couldn't lift my head. Ki ha'ar haya gadol, the light was so great. V'lo hayisi lachol yachol istakel, I couldn't look at Rashbi while he was telling us all of his Torah. B'soch kach nizdazati, shamati kol akori v'omer orech yom mushnos chayim. Achar kach shamati kol achar. So skip paragraph dalid. Kol osa hayom, that entire day. Lo nifsak ha'esh min habayis. There was a bright fire burning in the home. V'lo haya mishi agia elav. No one was able to approach Rashbi that entire day. Ki lo yachlu machmas sha'or va'esh hayu misav v'moso. The light, the fire, surrounded Rashbi that entire day. Ka osa hayom nafalti ala aretz v'gaisi. That day, I literally fell on the ground and I just yearned for the closeness. The fire left. I saw the great pillar, a reference to Rashbi. Kodesh Kadashim Shinestalik Min Ha'olam. And when the fire left, we had seen that Rav Shlomo Bar Yochai had passed away. Shinis Atef, he had wrapped himself in his talis. Shochev Al Yimino, he was lying on his right side. Upanav Tzolchokos. And he had a beautiful smile across his face. This was the last day of Rashbi's life. This was Lag BaOmer. So now you begin to put a number of things together. So why is it that again, according to the second approach, Lag BaOmer is a day of Mar Bimbo Kitzas Simcha. So again, we have two approaches within the second approach. Either it's the day that Rashbi came out of the cave, reintegrated into society, and assumed the mantle of leadership for Klal Yisrael. Second approach is it's the day of his Patir, it's the day that he died. Why celebrate the day that he died? Because it was Dafka on the day that he died that he gave Klal Yisrael a most magnificent gift. The gift, bless you, the gift of Torah's Hanistar. The gift, ultimately, again, of the hidden dimension of Torah. Just so you understand the greatness of Rashbi's gift. The greatness of Rashbi's gift is that, again, at the end of the day, to this very day, you know, If you think about it for just a moment, so the entire movement of Chassidus, right, is built on Torah's Hanistar. And even today, we see an incredible awakening in general around Torah's Hanistar. You know, just as an aside, in our generation, so the challenge is no longer to learn Torah, right? Because you can learn Torah. It doesn't matter. You have an education. Those have a background. Anyone could learn Torah. The challenge for our generation is finding meaning in learning. And so much of that meaning comes from Torah's Hanistar. We celebrate Lag BaOmer. Why? Because it was on this day, this last day of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's life, that again he gave us this voluminous amount of knowledge that he had kept stored in his heart, stored in his soul all these days. And now, by the way, just an aside, you also understand the symbolism of the bonfire on Lag BaOmer as well. Where does the bonfire come from? So the bonfire come is to recreate the incredible fire that surrounded Rashbi on that day when he conveyed the Torah sense. And not only that, but the Zohar actually goes on, in quotes on the sheet, the Zohar goes on, that an incredible miracle occurred that day. What was the incredible miracle? The sun did not set. But Rav Shimon bar Yochai would not let the sun set, whatever that means. Why? Because Rav Shimon bar Yochai knew this was his last day on this earth. And he knew that he had to convey all of this knowledge before he left, or else it would go with him to the grave. He commanded the sun not to set. The light continued into the night, again, all symbolized by the beautiful bonfire. So we have, interestingly enough, two different symbolisms. It's really three, but we'll condense it into two. Two different symbolisms that help to highlight the simcha of Lag BaOmer. Either, again, according to the first approach, Lag BaOmer is really Rabbi Akiva-centric. Rabbi Akiva-centric, that Lag BaOmer is the day, ultimately, again, where the students stopped dying, or Rabbi Akiva went ahead and started educating the new students. And the second approach is Rashbi-centric. The second approach knows Lag BaOmer is significant because this is the day that Rashbi exited the cave, re-entered society, assumed the mantle of leadership. This was the day that Rashbi died and ultimately went ahead and revealed all of the Idrazuto, Idraba, all of the hidden Torah, the Torah's Hanistar. But I want to point out that there is a common denominator in these both of these processes. Take a look at number 10. So this is a beautiful insight here by the Lulav Rebbe. Lulav Rebbe, in his Sefer Be'er Parashi, writes down the following. He says, Ata bino vizbonu noros. So we're jumping back to Rabbi Akiva for just a moment. So Lulav Rebbe says, think about how enormous this is. Kodim ha-Pesach amad Rabbi Akiva berashus yeshiva shachaf dalet alafim tamidim. Can you imagine, before Pesach, Rabbi Akiva stood at the helm of a prestigious yeshiva with 24,000 talmidim. 24,000. That was the yeshiva that Rabbi Akiva built. And by the way, it's even more. It's Rabbi Akiva at the age of 40 was an ignorant shepherd. Was an ignorant shepherd. And this man goes ahead and creates for himself, not just an identity for himself, but becomes a Rebbe to 24,000 talmidim. Vayhi ach yotzo yetzi ha-Pesach. And what happens again right after Pesach is over, the Talmidim just start dying. And he writes in parentheses, Chashavna kama halavayos hayu b'chol yom v'yom. Can you imagine how many levayos Rabbi Akiva is going to each and every day? Hari al piteva anoshi, haya Rabbi Akiva linto shako. Now human nature would have dictated that what should Rabbi Akiva's reaction to this, what should it have been? I'm done. I'm done. I can't. Meaning, I did my piece. I tried. You know, in life, sometimes all you can do is try. If your efforts bear fruit, it's fine. I tried. I can't do it. Remember, Rabbi Akiva, just so you understand, Rabbi Akiva, when all of this is happening, is approximately how old? Just so you understand, he's pushing 80. He's pushing 80 already. He's not, 80 is young. I'm not, right? 80 is very young. Right? Right? I say 80 is the new 40, right? But again, but whatever. The point is, Rabbi Akiva's life also was a tumultuous one. Rabbi Akiva's life was an exceptionally difficult one. Just from the beginning, from his childhood through his younger years, he had a hard life. He finally built something. And the moment that he thought that it was going to endure, it all implodes right in front of his eyes. What we would have expected, and we would not have faulted Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva would have said, you know what? I'm going to retire to some corner in the base medrash. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I don't have the koach to rebuild this. It's not, somebody else has to come in and do the heavy lifting. And what happens? Velomar, siminu min hashamayim, shein rotzim es yeshivaso, v'hayashav al beiso. And again, he could have easily played the frum card, right? What's the frum card? It's clearly the ratzon abore. You know, by the way, if I told you how many times that phrase is used as an excuse for laziness, it's amazing. Right? It's obviously the Rosh Hashanah doesn't want it. No, the Rosh Hashanah wants you to try harder. The Rosh Hashanah wants you to roll up your sleeves up, because Baruch wants you to put in a little bit more effort. But again, in this case, clearly, where this is divine, meaning again, 24,000 Talmidim dying in a short period of time, is clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending a message. Now, it turns out because Baruch Hu sending a message to the Talmidim, but in any event, Rabbi Akiva would have been within his right to say, I'm sorry, I'm going to go home, I'm going to spend some time with my mishpacha, I'm going to go ahead and build my own mishpacha, I'm going to build my own house, I'm going to be a good Jew, but I can't rebuild. Ach, Rabbi Akiva lo shasli bo l'chole, the paragraph base. But Rabbi Akiva will hear none of this. Amar, Ella Amar, Torah ma tehe aleha. Rabbi Akiva says one simple thing. If I don't act now, who will? It is always easy to outsource dynamic activity. But Rabbi Akiva says, this is my job. It was my job to build up the first 24,000. And although I know I'll never be able to replace the 24,000, I'll never be able to rebuild the yeshiva, I'll never be able to replace the grandeur, but I still have to do something to try to rebuild. Amad v'hischil akol mibereshis. Kovet es chameshes ha-talmidim lamdam es Torah so, umisham yata Torah li-yisrael ad hayom hazeh. Rabbi Akiva rolls up his sleeve, and you know what? He's only able to gather five. Only because, and by the way, I'll just point something else. That's very interesting. You know, Rabbi Akiva does not confer smicha to those five. Right? Smicha, remember, is the unbroken tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua. That's the only way the Masorah gets passed down is through smicha. Rabbi Akiva does not grant smicha to these five individuals. A man by the name of Yehuda ben Bava is the one who gives them smicha. Either because Rabbi Akiva had died already, or I should say was killed already, or because he was just too old. Meaning, he was an old man. He was an old man. And not only an old man, he was a broken man. You have to imagine, you can't lose 24,000 Talmidim. You can't lose, you know, and this is not just about your life's work. Like I said before, who do you think was taking care of the widows and the orphans? I guarantee you, it was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, you know, was the Gilgal of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the Rikar Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Akiva, Moshe Rabbeinu was the shepherd for the flock. Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd for the flock. So whether he didn't give the smicha because he died, whether he didn't give the smicha because he was too old, but he says, you know what, I can't give up. I can't give up. I have to roll up my sleeves and figure out what I need to do to rebuild. And we are here today because Rabbi Akiva went and found five new Talmidim. We are here today because Rabbi Akiva did not disappear into the shadows. Because Rabbi Akiva did not despair. Because Rabbi Akiva did not say, I did my work, I'm done, I'm Yotze. But Rabbi Akiva again put his effort in again and tried to rebuild. V'lo od, elo shebizchus zeh, zocha lahamid talmid gadol kirashbi. Shemi lanu gadol himenu. Amazingly enough, so what happened? Again, and you see how the stories begin to intersect. Because at the end of the day, Rabbi Akiva's greatest Talmid was Rav Shem Bar Yochai. And by the way, Rav Shem Bar Yochai learned in the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva for 12 years, for 11 years, 12 years, 13 years earlier. But then he went out. So at the time of this plague, he was wherever he was. He comes back, his Rebbe calls back, his Rebbe says, I need you. And together with his Rebbe, he partners and they rebuild Torah together. The incredible idea of Rabbi Akiva, and this is Rabbi Akiva, the essence, the gestalt of Rabbi Akiva, the essence of Rabbi Akiva is never giving up. Rabbi Akiva is the one who says that no matter how difficult life may be, one has to figure out how to persevere. One has to figure out, never buckle to your circumstances. Rabbi Akiva ultimately, again, is being butchered by the Romans, and in that moment, he's still teaching his Talmidim how to grow from these circumstances. Rabbi Akiva is the one where everybody just tears Kriya when they see the Chumah, when they see the empty Makam HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva says, I see the rebuilding in the ruins. I see that if one Nevuah of destruction has been fulfilled, then the Nevuah ultimately of rebuilding. This is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the one who says, everyone has difficult circumstances, but you can't buckle. You can't yield. You have to persevere. It's true. The narrative you get and the life you get is not always the one you choose. And maybe one could even make the argument that the lives we get are rarely the lives we would have scripted for ourselves. But Rabbi Akiva says, and here's the amazing part. You know, sometimes people give advice, and you hear them, and it's very meaningful, and you say to yourself, and you're all very nice. Right? You don't say, I say to myself, shkoyach, you know what? You don't have any challenges, or at least challenges that I know about. Mm-hmm. Seems to me that everything in life, at least externally, though you never know what's going on in a person's life, seems to be going great to you. So, thank you. Thank you for being mechazik me. Right? Thank you for telling me that I should have emunah, and thank you for telling me all this stuff. You know, it's always wonderful. People tell, should have emunah even in difficult times, wonderful. Tell me, what are your challenges? What are your challenges? Tell me, because I know what my challenges are, and just on the surface at least, it appears that my challenges are a bit more acute than your challenges. So I'm a kabbal everything you're saying, but it's hard for me to fully ingest the message. But when you hear from Rabbi Akiva, when Rabbi Akiva says, I'm telling you, life has to be about two words, perpetual planting. Perpetual planting. Because sometimes in life you plant in the dawn, in the morning of life, and everything you planted just goes bad. Everything you planted, it gets destroyed. And so the only thing you can do is plant some more. Life is about perpetual planting because the only option, the only other alternative is to wallow in self-pity. The only alternative is to spend your life feeling bad for yourself. Is to spend your life lamenting your plight. So, some people have difficulty, a lot of challenges, and maybe they're entitled to do that. But even if you're entitled to do it, do you really want to do it? Because at the end of the day, what does it get you? So Rabbi Akiva says, "Baboker zara saracha." Even if you plant it in the morning, I'm just giving you warning. It's quite possible it won't endure. Therefore, la'erev al tanach yadecha. Keep planting, no matter what happens in life. Keep doing, keep growing, keep planting, keep accomplishing. Because there are no guarantees how life goes. But if you live a life of perpetual planting, then no matter what happens, you know that you have left a legacy. Maybe it's not the legacy you scripted for yourself. Maybe it's not the legacy you had wanted, but it's a legacy nevertheless. That's Rabbi Akiva. I'll tell you something amazing. If you take a look, wish we had more time, but if you take a look, okay, fine, we'll make more time. Take a look at paragraph Gimel. This is from the Rebbe Rashi. Now, this is amazing. And I'm going to share with you two dramatically different accounts of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's childhood. Two dramatically different accounts. If you take a look at paragraph Gimel, he says, "Kol rasa v'leidaso sharashbi lo haya ela ayide tefila v'tzaka meblilis yaish." Rashbi's entire birth, was only a result of the tefilos and of the unwillingness to give up of his parents. Kim is supar. Now he's quoting a sefer Nachlas Avos. I don't know what this is. I'm sorry. He's quoting a sefer here because, as you're going to see in just a moment, this is not the normative narrative. He says Sheyochai Aviv Sharabi Shimon Lo Zacha Lepri Bet and Shalom Harbe. Yochai, Rabbi Shimon's father, was not privileged to have children. Nimnu v'gamru sheigarish tishto. So you know, again, there's a halacha that says that if a couple can't have children after 10 years, then it may be best for them to separate, to each remarry, and hopefully be able to have a family. So Nebuch, again, he and his wife made the decision, we're not having children, then maybe we should go our separate ways. V'yisacharis l'kai misas pirvarivya. Ach zugaso shalo rata sabazos. Amdo ubachsa yamim rabim b'dima'u shlish. V'tzavcha b'mar libash sheritzona li'pakir b'zarish l'kayama. But his wife would not hear of it. She said, no, we can't give up. We can't give up. And so the story is told that she cried and she cried and she davened to be blessed with the child. Paragraph Dalet. Bilel Rosh Hashanah, Ra'a Yochai Bechalomo, Shehinehu Omid Besada Melea Eitzim. So what happens? On Rosh Hashanah night, Yochai, Rabbi Shimon's father, sees in a dream that he's standing in a field filled with trees, gidolim uktan, large trees, small trees, v'atzmo nishan geze eitz katan sheino sepri, and Yochai himself is standing by a small geza eitz katan, a small sapling or a trunk really that is not sprouting at all. Odra, so while he's standing there again, in this forest, right, in this field that's filled with trees, big or small, Yochai standing by his, which ultimately, again, is just a stump. Odra, shenichnas malach, im chavis melea mayim shal apardes. So what happened? So Yochai's watching, and an angel comes into the field with, this is all a dream, all with a chavis, with a barrel filled with water. V'over bein ha'ilonos u'mashke chelik mea itzim mea mayim shebe chavis. Having Yochai, she'elu ha'ilonos heim b'nei Adam, v'amayim shumashkim rami she'elu ha'noshim yisku l'zer shel kayama, b'shana haba l'tova. Yochai realizes that each of those trees represent people. And when the Malach waters the tree and the tree sprouts fruit, that's symbolic that those people will be privileged to have children in the coming year. The Malach is watering the trees on Rosh Hashanah, symbolizing that those people will be blessed with children in the coming year. So listen to this. So Yochai is standing by his tree. The Malach comes. Hotzi Hamalach mechekot sluchis ketano. The Malach goes in and takes out a little flask. The Malach goes ahead and pours the liquid, pours from the flask onto the trunk that Yochai is standing by. And the tree begins to sprout. The tree sprouted and began to go and sprouted forth beautiful fruit. This is all a dream. All a dream. Paragraph Hey. When Yochai woke up, so Yochai realized that this was no ordinary dream, but he was being given the bracha, being able to see that this year they would be blessed with a child. He told his wife. What happens? B'motzei Rosh Hashanah, panu el rabam Rabbi Akiva. See the incredible confluence. Who was the family rav? Who was the family rav for Yochai and his wife? Rabbi Akiva. The very man who would become the Rebbe of their son. So they go to Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Shachin zehu os v'simun sheyudah lahem ben zachar b'zu hashana. This was a clear sign they were going to have a son that year. B'matzei Rosh Hashanah, panu, I'm sorry. However, Shal Yochai, madua hishka hamalach es eitzu mitok tzluchis miyuchedes al michaves agdola kishari lanos. So Yochai, you know, it's interesting. So this, you know, just be happy with the dream and go. You know, get out. Yochai's got kashas, right? He's got questions. Says Rebbe, why is it that the Malach went ahead and watered all of the other trees from the barrel, yet my tree he watered from the little flask? To which Rabbi Akiva, the great tzaddik, says, no, Rabbi Akiva, tzluches zu haisa malea b'nachali hadima shershevcha ha'isha mikiras libo. That flask was filled with the tears of your wife. That flask was filled with the tears of your wife. And as a result of the zechuyos of those tears, tisku legadel ilana ravriva. You will be zocha not just to have a son, but you will be zocha meretz Hashem to have a great tree. Va'achin zochu, the Rabbi Shimon, excuse me, zochu leben gadol, sheher es kala olam v'hu rashbi. They are blessed with a son who literally illuminated the eyes of Klal Yisrael, and that son was Rashbi. What do you see about the parents of Rashbi? You see again a similar quality. An unwillingness to give up. An unwillingness to yield to circumstances. A willingness to purposely plant. To constantly plant, replant, plant, replant. And whatever I have to do to get what I want out of life, I'm not going to stop until I get it. What's the alternate version of Rashbi's life? Take a look at number 11. This is from a Sefer Chachamim, which is a wonderful series of Sfarim, focused on biographies of the Tanam and Amoraim. Just giving you a life history. So the author writes over here, Hamiyada'as abeis avish Rashbi muat. What we know about Rashbi's family and his upbringing is unknown. Remember again, this, I don't know where the Sefer Nachalas Avos is gleaning this biographical information from. It could be that maybe it's written down in the Zohar. I'm not sure. In any event, he writes over here, we know very little about Rashbi's upbringing. What we do know is, well, at least what he says is, Nira shehabayis lohaya kasher leolamim shel chachamim. That Rashbi's family was not connected to the rabbinic community. In other words, which is a nice way of saying that what? That they perhaps were not so connected Judaically. They were, can you imagine this? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's family, now, but I just want to point out, just the polar opposite, as I'm telling you, different accounts, just dramatically different accounts. And by the way, it's not a question of who's right, it's that there's nothing in the text, meaning we glean our biographical information from three places, from Medrash, from Gemara, and I guess from Zohar, from Kabbalah as well. I don't know where this Nachalas Avos is bringing this down from, but it's not found in any of those sources. So therefore, again, if you just go textually, there's very little we know about. Now we don't have time to get into. What we do know is, Achaya Mukar Ubal Bini Ashotosama. What we do know is that Rabbi Shimon's father Yochai was very tight with the Romans. That we do know. Now, in general, Jews who are close with the Romans, it was usually an either-or relationship. You either were tight with the Romans, or you were embedded with the Jewish community. So this paints a dramatically different picture. This paints a picture of a young man who's growing up in a home with very little Torah, very little connection to Rabbanim, very little Yiddishkeit. Now, why is this important? Because take a look at number 12 very quickly. We have minus 2 minutes. So take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon says, this is Rabbi Shimon Yochai, says, Shlosha Ksarim Hein. There are three crowns, Keser Torah, Keser Kehuna, Keser Malchus, the Keser Shem Tov Ola Al Gabehen. So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Yochai says, there are three crowns, the crown of Torah, the crown of Kehuna, the crown of Malchus, and the crown of a good name surpasses them all. In number 30, which we're going to do outside the Avos Rabbi Nosson, they have a little bit of an alternate version. In this version, Rabbi Shimon says, there are three crowns, and it's the crown of Torah that surpasses all of them. Why? Understand, what is Rashbi saying? Rashbi is saying, you know what? I would love to be a Kohen. I love to be a Kohen, but no matter how badly I want it, as they say, ain't going to happen. For one simple reason, my father is not a Kohen. My paternal grandfather is not a Kohen. I'm not going to be a Kohen. So I could be Kohanic-like. I could emulate the Kuna, but I will never, ever be a Kohen. Maybe I'd love to be the Melech. Well, in order to be a Melech, you have to be a direct descendant of David HaMelech. See, there's our Tehillim tie-in. Right? So you have to be a direct descendant of David HaMelech. So again, if I'm from Shevet Zvulun, or if I'm from Shevet Yehuda, which chances are most of us are from Shevet Yehuda, it's one of the remaining tribes. But again, if I'm not part of the Davidic line, I'm not in the running. But Rashbi says, I want to tell you something. If you want Torah, if you want that crown of Torah, you want spirituality, you want a relationship with God, you want the crown of a good name, you want to be a Baal Midos Tovos, then you know what? It doesn't matter who your father is. And it doesn't matter who your Shevet is. And it doesn't matter who your family is. If you are willing to plant, then you can have whatever you want in life in the realm of spirituality. And Rashbi says, lest you think that I'm just espousing nice armchair wisdom, this is my life. This is my life. Do you know where I came from? I came from a family. I came from a father who was closer with the Romans than he was with Rabbi Akiva, at least according to this alternate version. I came from a family that had very little Judaic connection, but I made a choice in life. I made a choice to plant and to replant, and Rashbi has a number of setbacks in his own life. Rashbi encountered those numbers, but again, Rashbi again always plants, purposely plants, intentionally plants and replants over and over again. So you begin to see now that all of these answers really merge into one. That what's the greatness of Lag BaOmer? That Lag BaOmer is the day when we celebrate the ability to plant in the morning and plant in the evening. Lag BaOmer is the day when we celebrate our inner resilience. Lag BaOmer is the day when we celebrate the fact that no matter what our circumstances are, we have the ability to purposely plant. We have the ability to create something beautiful. It may not be what we dreamed of. It may not be what we desire. It may not be what we had in mind for ourselves. But nothing could break us. No circumstances have the ability to bring us to our knees unless we allow them to. The greatness of Lag BaOmer, whether you want to go with the Rabbi Akiva narrative or you want to go with the Rashbi narrative, in reality, it's the same narrative. Lag BaOmer is a day when the students stopped dying, but that's not enough. It's then Rabbi Akiva said after the last Levaya. Do you know what Rabbi Akiva did after the last Levaya? Do you know what he did? Do you know what he did? He got on his wagon, he went down south, and he gathered a new group of Talmidim. Not the next day, not the next week, not the next month, not to take a little bit of time to regroup. After the last Levaya, the Medrash says, he left the Levaya and he went south to find his new Talmidim. What does Rashbi do as soon as he comes out of the cave? He leads. What does Rashbi do ultimately with his last day of life? He says, my children, I want to give you more light. What does Rashbi represent? Rashbi represents the idea that no matter what your life circumstances, you know, can't choose your family. That's one thing that's clear. Rashbi says, I didn't choose this. It would have been wonderful to be born into a rabbinic family, into a family that's Machshav Torah. This is the family I have. But I choose not to be defined by those circumstances. I'm sure there are many wonderful things to learn from his parents. But I choose to define my circumstances, not to be defined by my circumstances. And now we come full circle. Now we understand Lashon Shulchan Aruch. This is where we're really going to end. Shulchan Aruch says, remember, underlined line in number one, how do we understand this day? Mar bimbo kitsas simcha. Why only kitsas simcha? Because Lag BaOmer is not a carefree day. Lag BaOmer is not Purim. Lag BaOmer is not even Yom Tov. Lag BaOmer is a day where I still have to confront all of my difficulties and all of my challenges. Lag BaOmer is a day where I have to live in this world and I have to realize everything that's broken and everything that's wrong. So is it a day of full unadulterated simcha? No. It's a day where I'm still very shakua, very immersed in the reality of my existence. But it's Mar Ben Bo Kitzas Simcha, because I realize that no matter how overwhelming those circumstances may be, I have the ability to own them and not let them own me. I have the ability to make myself into the person I want to be. I have the ability to make my life into what I want it to be. So it's Mar Ben Bo Kitzas Simcha. Not full simcha, because each of us has a peckle. Each of us has a peckle. And you know, some people carry their peckle, you know, in a carry-on baggage. Some people have to purchase extra suitcases. Everyone has a peckle. And that peckle doesn't go away. The shaila is, the question is, do you define yourself as a person with a peckle? Or you define yourself as a person who, yes, has a peckle, but look at what I could accomplish. Look at what I do. Look at how I could plant and replant and purposely plant every single day. And herein lies the greatness of Lag BaOmer. And if we internalize this message, we begin to see that, in fact, Lag BaOmer, the goal is not to celebrate Lag BaOmer on one day of the year. The goal really is to make every day into Lag BaOmer. To make every day into a day where I acknowledge and recognize my challenges, but where I find the koach of Rabbi Akiva, where I find the koach of Rashbi to continue planting, where I find that koach, despite all of the things that are broken, all the things are wrong, to find a way to own my circumstances, find a way to make something beautiful, find a way to be productive, find a way to keep on planting. All right, we'll stop over here for today.